God, that was a crash course, wasn't it? I mean, we all received this thing. It says, what place for the informal economy and green and inclusive growth? Do we all have a better idea than at 9 o'clock? Yeah. I mean, certainly my ignorance is a bit more focused now. The invitation also said it would be an event to inspire collaborative action. Do people feel a bit inspired? I think we could certainly come back with a carefully crafted value proposition to you after this meeting. I mean, certainly as organisers, we were really impressed that we got people from all over the world who came quite a long way to talk about this. It made us think there aren't enough opportunities, and yet we hear the informal economy is 80% of some countries. So there's clearly some kind of demand. This is huge. So thank you for being there at what we hope is the beginning. And we've got some people have been working in the informal economy all their lives, basically. Others have been studying it, and a couple of people have said to me, this is a good opportunity to share. There are people like me and others who have a curiosity towards it, because we think it is the lessons, the people, the majority are part of the future we all seek together. So we have to make those connections so futures can be better informed. Yes, Louise talked about enthusiasts, and we've learned from them. I think we've learned about new policy spaces with promise for the informal economy. And the green economy space certainly seems to be one, because it's embracing both. It's come to realise it has to embrace both the informal and the formal. Formal being basically out of date, reflecting historical anomalies. So now, let me try and get a few things from my notes. Please bear with me. Did we reach consensus? Yeah, I think we reached consensus on the significance of the informal economy. It's bigger than the formal, it's more diverse, it's often growing, but it's intimately tied with the formal. So we have to acknowledge it. Marty told us that. Peter told us it will create more jobs very often, especially in agriculture. George told us that although the formal economy is full of silos, so it's kind of rigid, the informal economy has new ways of making connections, social media. So it's itself got many connections, strengths needed for a resilient future. I think it's very helpful as well, Marty, setting out this diversity, illegals, evaders, and the biggest category, others trying to earn an honest living, but who are suffering from toxic regulations that don't help them lead out of poverty. And these are the people we need to work with. This is our challenge, that majority in developing countries. So people talked about, I don't know whether we had a consensus on the sort of whole roadmap of where to move ahead, but we certainly got some directions. So from sort of backward-looking myths and prejudices being perpetrated to forward-looking, real views of realities that will help futures. From sort of dark and exclusionary language that's always facing and serving formal economy to positive, inclusive language, respectful of the informal economy. Using new terms, as Camilla was saying, shared economy, people's economy, that actually could be politically attractive. From assumptions that the formal economy has all the right answers and principles to actually some crystal clear evidence about the strengths of the informal economy and its attractive values that help define resilient futures that people want to be in. From a non-thing, an informal, an unmeasured, unscrutinised, unmandated, to a thing in itself that's desirable, that's visible, we look at, that's dynamic, that attracts people, that attracts investment, not a non-thing anymore. From dialogue being sort of confused, paralysed by complexity, we can't move, it's so many problems, to a dialogue that's actually now more evidence-based. We've got to work on that evidence. And that uses, as Marty was saying, actually using clear and agreed definitions so that we can organise that dialogue and make progress rather than sort of at cross purposes. From disconnect, a lot of disconnect, that we've sort of built this high and harsh immovable boundary between formal and informal. It's like the Berlin Wall. to much more connections. We need to, people have used all these sort of architectural sort of terms like bridges, doors, gateways, that sort of thing. We need to make those connections, not Trump-style walls, but bridges. And recognising all the bridges within the informal economy, as I was mentioning. So that we move from top-down formalisation, where it's all set by government, to seeking out different constituencies in the informal economy, respecting them, encouraging their self-organisation, and co-designing the new institutions and policies we need. With the result that the informal economy is no longer that sort of necessity, poverty-driven thing that's underinvested and constantly in debt, towards opportunity and business-driven, attracting people. For me, actually, I was with Georgette in Ghana. One of the litmus tests is that women who are dependent on the informal economy but not really helped, and they're burdened by it, are supported and they're able to offer their insights and skills. So there's some of those shifts that I think we need to make, even if we haven't defined precise outcomes and the processes and the sort of inputs to go towards it. So we've talked a bit about the new agenda. I mean, some of the context for the new policy agenda that Oliver's talked about is that big structural changes are coming, energy and finance. It's happening anyway. We have in this period of time to get informality recognized as part of that process of change, get the informal economy and its players in it, or the responses will simply extend current biases against it, and solutions won't draw on the strengths of the informal economy. So I think the kind of key words for the new agenda is making connections between formal and informal and within the informal, more evidence of what's working, rebranding the informal economy to be a thing, safe and recognised action dialogue, where through that dialogue you move on to, you know, serious sector reform. I mentioned Georgette and I were in Ghana together. We started a process that was, we just called it dialogue. Let's talk about things. We produced some research on the position of artisanal miners. We consulted with individual stakeholder groups. We put them together first in the field to meet with miners, to meet with those abused women miners. The dialogue itself realized that there is a roadmap for change required. The dialogue spotted the leaders in that change process, in big and small miners, in government, and sort of formed a leadership group and mandated them to help everyone move forward. Then they started to allow themselves to use the word sector reform. So it's a kind of a step-by-step thing. And people have talked about, perhaps to avoid confusion, it might be better to pick up sectors where there's space, or countries where there's space to do this. But clearly it has to involve more than government. Sometimes government's in the lead. Brazil public procurement we've heard about. Sometimes private sectors opening up. Lessons from outgrower schemes. The entry points for us, as I say, I think people are talking sectors and countries. We're beginning to make a very good generic case that the informal economy matters, and actually this meeting will help C4 and IID and the partners to make a really nice generic case. We now need specific business cases in sectors and countries, and we also need big stories to inspire us. I've been sitting with Sian, who's our chief writer, and she's always on the lookout for a story. She said, look how many people are talking about the big Brazil formalization case, you know, we need, that Peter talked about. We need more of these. We need to understand them and present them. Thus, the India social media and social enterprise revolutions. Lots of colleagues like Alexandra talked about local circular economy cases. Let's look at those, detail the stories of change where it actually happened, really make it visible, the problems and the solutions, as Carol was saying, put it out for debate in the media. And maybe we might draw lessons from our Ghana exercise, learning and leadership groups who, between sectors and between countries, can work together. I think a strong case was coming forward all the time that, you know, we just cannot ignore agriculture, food production and food security. It links producers and consumers. It's really big, really important. The future of agriculture is intimately tied up with it, as is the future of many women's livelihoods. So that's definitely one. The national process, we have talked about, I think, early on people said national development plans don't make space for informal economy. There's a new era coming up. Countries are going to have to get to grips with the sustainable development goals that offer perhaps a new, more embracing paradigm, apart from having things like inequality as a goal. So maybe national sustainable development planning processes gives us an opportunity to think about how formalization should be done. It was good to hear the Green Economy Coalition's, I think, a sort of offer of a collaboration in the seven national processes. The seven countries have formal processes run by the UN and by GGGI, and GEC has a mandate for parallel but connected processes for civil society and non-formal actors to engage. It sounds like a great opportunity. I don't know that was an invitation to South Africa and equally attractive to the Caribbean, but there seem to be some national processes there that might welcome some input. Thank you, Mao. Thank you, Tai. 50-50 will be there. So national thematic, I think there's a sense that a global platform built on today may well have value. I suspect we can come back to you with a value proposition. That's where I've got to. Sorry, you know how it is when you've been typing all day. So thanks very much for inspiring me today. Thank you, Oliver.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Steve. And we are going to write all this up, aren't we, Bill? But, one of those moments where you wonder whether we could use something like Google Docs and other people could also edit it and contribute and start thinking about some shared ownership of that document and some sort of sense of shared branding that, you know, that starts to say, we had this meeting, not just a few organised it. We had this meeting. Anyway, just a thought. I'm just going to close now with a few thank yous. So, obviously, lots of people have come for a long way. WIEGO, C4, OECD, West Africa. So, Marty, we really appreciate you leading us out, so thank you very much. We've had a fabulous contribution from all our speakers, and I can't possibly mention them all, but you know that they're all amongst you. So thank you very much for that. They've come a long way. We have had an organising team, but particular thanks to Mariam and Laura from IIED. Thank you, Mariam and Laura. Got us all here, got it all sorted. What a fabulous venue. Apparently the Twitter space has been twittering crazily, so we want to thank our comms team, Matt, Kate, Catherine and Sean. And we're going to be lots of stories, and they're all from IIED as well, so thank you, IIED, on that. The donors, we have had lots of in-kind. People have turned up. You've turned up, you know. But we do actually also have to thank WIEGO, DFID, CIFOR, and Tier Fund have also contributed. So thank you very much for that. The table shepherds have been sitting here helping you, hopefully. Thank you. The Church House team, Mike Bird, WIEGO as well, has been really helpful for us. Thank you very much for all the work you've done behind the scenes. Bill Vorley wrote this, so he didn't put his own name on it, but he's the man with the brains behind who spotted the elephant in the green economy agenda, that there was no mention of informality. So, Bill, we do really appreciate your... UCL have also... Teresa and her team from the Green Economy Society. There is a Green Economy Society in a university. What a fabulous thing. And Teresa's brought all her people, and they were helping you up the stairs and into the room, so thank you, and we hope that you've got that. There is the final thank you, which is really around all of you have come here, all of you have collaborated, and I'm thanking you for what you've done to come here, but we're also thanking you in anticipation of what you're going to do next, which is to go on to that shared document and to add your thoughts and to read it through and to take this agenda forward and to think explicitly about collaboration. So it is, we would like to invite you to join us for drinks, which are already here. That's a lovely way to drink in a church and to look at our photographs and thank you very much and have a safe visit home. Oh, I've got something else to do. Well done, everybody. Thank you very much.